Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We got a fun show today. Shaquille O'Neal's going to stop by. Join us for a little conversation. Yeah, short guy, small guy. We'll talk about that. We got some insight into Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, but we got to start with where the state of affairs are with the Los Angeles Lakers. They acquired Anthony Davis over the weekend. That we know. Optimism is high around Tinseltown. That we also know. But did you know how high? The Lakers, tied for the most losses in the NBA the last 6 years, are currently the favorites to win the 2020 NBA title at 3-1 odds. And that's why the AD trade was so important for LA. Nick, let's kick this off with you. Will the Lakers live up to expectations? Because these are about as lofty as they get.
As long as these next 30 days go right, there's no reason they shouldn't. As long as they either find a way through some salary cap manipulation and through some beneficial decisions by the Pelicans to either add a third superstar, or if those things don't happen where the Pelicans say, no, we want this to go through on July 6th, they fill out the roster with the correct complementary players, meaning wing defenders, three-point shooters, with a focus on guards, then there's no reason the Lakers shouldn't be exactly who they are in Vegas right now, which is the favorites to win a title, the favorites to come out of the West. They've got the man who I still believe is the best player in basketball. Everyone knows is at the very least still a top three player in basketball, and a guy who is another top 10 player in the discussion for the best big man in basketball just entering the prime of his career. It is the best duo in the NBA by a wide margin. I was thinking about this after the show yesterday. The next best duo is Russ and Paul George, Kawhi and whomever his second best teammate is.
Yes.
Giannis and Chris Middleton.
It depends on after free agency. We don't know with KD. We don't know with Kyrie. We don't know where Kawhi is going to go. But after that, say at the end of July, LeBron
and Anthony Davis will be one almost assuredly.
Yes.
And then as the roster sits here today, the second best is probably Giannis and Middleton, Lillard and McCollum. Like, it is the best duo in basketball. So the only thing that would prevent them from reaching their potential, other than injury, and we obviously saw injury rear its very ugly head in these NBA playoffs, would be if they do not competently fill out the rest of the roster. I don't know that I should have faith in Rob Pelinka to do that the right way, but they're in a position where it's going to be hard to screw this up, and the options are pretty obvious. So, yes, I think they'll live up to their lofty potential, and they should live up to their lofty potential.
Let's also, you have to throw in what's happened in the NBA in the last couple weeks. Kevin Durant's hurt, probably going to miss 9 months, a year of basketball. Klay's hurt. So even Golden State, even if KD said he's going to come back, we're going to sign KD, going to sign Klay, it's not going to matter for next year because they're not going to be available. KD potentially all year and Klay until at least the midpoint in the season, I think after that. So let's look at the West, who they'll be going against. They're going to be better than Golden State. Let's just go back down to playoffs, the Western Conference, Portland Trailblazers. The reason why I said this, Nick, because you said something astonishing yesterday. Anthony Davis, in the closeout game, how many points did he have?
He had 47 and 12 year before last to sweep the Blazers in game five.
Okay, so the Blazers were the conference final team. Mm-hmm. So let's just go to Denver. They beat them in seven. What about their center, Nick? How good is he as far as...
So Nikola Jokic, listen, I have to give him credit. He was way better in these playoffs than I expected. But if there's one guy that can do the things Nikola can do, except for the passing, but everything on a higher level, it's Anthony Davis. And he's a great defender while Jokic is a negative defender.
Yeah, so if you look at the teams in the West, Houston, they got turmoil there in Houston. They're thinking about breaking up the squad. I like Anthony Davis and LeBron coming together, going against them. So when you look at, they can get to the conference final. You can get to the conference final. You can get to the NBA championship. And I don't believe they can mess up the bottom of that roster because I just believe there's a lot of conversations. There's a lot of guys looking. Patrick Beverley, we're there with the Clippers. What are they going to do? I believe there's just a number of players that are going to help fill out that roster. I do believe, Jenna, that they will live up to the expectations.
Is it as automatic as you're both saying? I mean, let's factor in the one thing that plagued LeBron last year and that has plagued Anthony Davis, which are injuries. Let's factor in the fact that the Lakers last year didn't surround, you know, LeBron James with the right type of players, even though he supposedly knew who he wanted. I mean, they've made mistakes in the past. Are they all of a sudden, do you think, going to get it right moving forward?
Even with last year's mistake, they would have been in the playoffs. So even
had
if
LeBron
they make
not
it
gotten hurt.
Now, even if his injury had been half as severe, he misses half the time. But also, you can't forget, Rondo missed a bunch of time. Lonzo Ball missed a bunch of time. Ingram missed time. So they had all these other players. So we can't factor injuries into it. We couldn't factor injuries into Golden State. That's what brought them down. So you can't factor injuries into it unless a guy is trying to come back from an injury. So, no, we should expect the LeBron James that we have seen 15 out of the 16 seasons, he's going to be healthy to play 72-ish games. And I believe that Anthony Davis has gotten beyond the injury bug.
That's what I was going to bring up, was I think Anthony Davis gets nicked a lot, but has not suffered any catastrophic injuries in his career. The fewest games he's ever played in a season prior to last year, and last year was not about injury, it was about the trade demand and the mayhem that followed, was 61 games. The two seasons prior to last year, he played 75 games and 75 games. So, Anthony Davis is a guy that throughout his career has missed a couple games with a malady that people are like, really? But he's not a guy, it's like, oh, he had major surgery, he's out 2 months.
Right.
That has not been the issue for him. And as far as LeBron goes, I want to revisit something Sarah Kustak said yesterday, which is what version of LeBron are we going to get when for 8 straight years his season went into June, where the last time his season didn't end in June was 2010, and this year it ended March 29th, wherefore he has, since his third year in the league, averaged more than 90 games played per season. And this year played 55 games. What level of, we saw the toll, 5 straight finals, took on the Golden State Warriors individually and as a team. The toll, 8 straight finals, took on LeBron. Did that have to do with that groin injury? And how much will having more time for his body to recuperate than he has had since high school, how much will that play into the version of LeBron we get next season?
All right, so if injuries are out, what would prevent this team from winning the title?
I think right now, looking at what NBA teams, what they typically do when they win, and I would say defense. Are they going to be a top 10 defensive team? And if they're a top 5 defensive team, they're going to be elite. They can be world champions. So for me, when you look at all the players they're going to get, are they going to get spacers? Are they going to get 3-and-D players? Who is going to be added? If there's one stat you want to be able to look at that would be able to determine the fate of the Lakers, where do they rank defensively? And if they're a top 10 defensive team, which I believe they will be with Anthony Davis on the back end of that defense, then can they ratchet it up to be a top 5 playoff team? I believe that right there, that sets them apart from the other teams.
And that is one stat that has just been true across NBA history. If you are not a top 10 defense, you are almost drawing dead to win the title. One of the Shaq and Kobe teams was not a top 10 defense. They ended up winning the title. This year, Golden State, 13th in defense. They don't win the title. Toronto, their top 6 defense. They do win the title. The one Cavs team with LeBron that won the title. They squeaked in at the end of the year to 10th defensively. So can the Lakers be a top 10 defense? Can they fill out the rest of their roster? And the other domino that has to fall is, where does Kawhi Leonard go, and does he, how good is that team? Because we have to give all due respect to the reigning finals MVP, what he was able to do over the course of these playoffs. While I still feel LeBron is the best player in the world, Kawhi earned that title, so we have to see where the guy who has the title right now lands before we determine how big of the favorites the Lakers actually are.
All right, speaking of Kawhi, can he help save the Knicks' future? That's coming up next.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
All right, let's talk some basketball now. Kawhi Leonard celebrated his title at the parade in Toronto yesterday. Amidst that celebration, lingering questions about his future. Now, according to our Chris Carter, the five teams that will get a meeting with Kawhi are the Raptors, the Lakers and Clippers out in L.A., and the Nets and Knicks in New York. Now, for the Knicks, interesting times with KD out next season, with Anthony Davis no longer available, and with Kyrie seemingly Brooklyn bound. Nick, is Kawhi the only chance the Knicks have now to salvage their offseason?
No, he's not the only chance, but he's the best option. But if the Knicks walk away this offseason with Kevin Durant and Kevin Durant only, it's still a great offseason, even though he's going to be on the shelf for a year. I do not believe Kevin Durant, when he comes back, is going to be a shell of his former self. I don't believe that, flatly. Rudy Gay, at an older age, a less explosive athlete, we saw him suffer an Achilles, come back and be fine. We obviously everyone.
And Rudy Gay's a good friend of his. They've been in communication with each other
exactly
since KD got hurt, showing him what's the best way to do it. The rest is important. And he told Kevin Durant something that I was shocked to hear, that he was ready to play basketball in 6 months. But the Spurs, they kept him getting back onto the court. So that was great news for KD.
And so if the Knicks end up with just Kevin Durant, then that would be a successful offseason. If they end up with Kawhi Leonard, it is the most successful offseason. What KD's injury plus Kawhi's ascendance plus the Raptors championship, to me, what it has changed is, even if KD were healthy, there would be a real discussion. If you can only have one, who do you want? Going into this year, that would have never thought to have been a discussion. Even the biggest Kawhi Leonard supporters or fans wouldn't have thought he could possibly, in a season, surpass Kevin Durant. He might have done it, and that was before KD ruptured his Achilles. So,
but did he do it since he ruptured his Achilles?
Absolutely. And so Kawhi is the best option for the New York Knicks. If they end up with Kawhi Leonard, then they have the freedom of so many options. I was talking to a Knicks fan that I really like and respect, smart basketball guy, yesterday, and the question I asked him, if Kawhi signs up and you have the option then to sign a Kyrie or a Kemba or Durant, which one do you want? Pre-Achilles, there wouldn't have been a question.
Of course.
Kawhi and KD would become the best duo in basketball. But post-Achilles, he said he'd take the guard. Give me Kyrie, give me Kemba, let me go compete for a championship immediately and not have the specter of KD's injury hanging over us. That is, to me, it's a legitimate debate. Kawhi's the best solution for the Knicks, but he is not. We're being, I think, disrespectful to the player. Durant will be, and Kyrie or Kemba, their ability to act as if Kawhi is the only solution for the Knicks.
Do you agree with Nick that if you only get KD and you don't have him next year and your team looks very much like it did last year, it's still a win for the Knicks?
I know the Knicks are prepared for this. In college basketball, if you were recruiting and you were one of the top schools and you got the number one recruit, and say, for instance, he got hurt in an all-star game. Say he got some type of transcript problem where he wouldn't be available for the first year. You know what that team do? They just sit there and wait on him. And that's what the Knicks are prepared to do. They are prepared. A number of different scenarios that have been presented to me. Yes, Kevin Durant by himself, keeping the cap space available. Kevin Durant with these other players. Kawhi Leonard being priority number one after Kevin Durant. Now, right now, I would just have to say this. The Knicks would be in a predicament if they had to decide between who was more important. They couldn't make up their mind between KD and Kawhi. And because potentially, maybe because this thing started with KD and KD has knowledge of some of the people in the Knicks organization, KD might be a little bit ahead in that. But Kawhi being 27 could be the cornerstone of the franchise for a long period of time. So I just think that the Knicks, they like the bigger. They like Kawhi and they like KD more so than any of the guards. They look at
and they're better players than the guards. Well, flatly. They're not just bigger people. I know you like athletes, big, strong, fast. But Kawhi and KD are not the best available.
But they're worried about the guards from a defensive standpoint, too. They worry about Kyrie's body, and they worry about Kemba as a defender. So it's not just the size. It's who these other players, if they'd be matched up with KD or with Kawhi.
And so if the Knicks get Kawhi Leonard, then they go compete for a championship. That's what they do. Whether they sign another star or not, they use the other cap space intelligently.
You mean if they get Kawhi and not KD?
Yeah, if they get just Kawhi Leonard, you go compete for a championship. If you get Kawhi and KD's on the shelf, in that scenario, it would actually be harder to compete for a championship this year because you can't use that cap space on complementary players. But that's what you do. That's what Kawhi proved and where the NBA is now, that we at least temporarily, if not for a long period of time, seem to be past the era of the super team. Now, if the Lakers end up signing a third star, then we might be right back in it. But right now, when we're talking about the duos in basketball, you go compete for a championship if you get Kawhi Leonard. If you get Kevin Durant, it's all delayed for a year, but you are still happy because you have one of the five best players in the league.
But people need to realize every team that Kawhi is going to sit down and talk to, they all have a real opportunity for him to go there. He is not going to waste his time going to 10 teams, 8 teams. He's picked the 5 organizations that he feels like with the right stuff that he would go to all of them. He's not taking any of these visits as a courtesy. Brooklyn, yesterday, they've decided to do things as far as exercising options. They got over $40 million available. They can sign 2 players. The Knicks, we know what they have made available to sign 2 stars. The Clippers have been the most talked about team as far as Kawhi, but I wouldn't say that there's someone right now besides Toronto because of the experience he's been there. Right. So everyone, them, the Lakers, they have a real opportunity. So everyone's need to get their act together and act as if you can't acquire a Kawhi compared to am I just getting a meeting?
How do you recruit a guy like Kawhi Leonard? He's a little bit different. We talked about how different KD was and where he'd fit in. But these are 4 very different teams, but in 2 very big markets if you take Toronto out of it. How do you recruit Kawhi Leonard?
I think Kawhi is concerned about a number of different things. Number one is he going to get better as a basketball player? Like, he is really into improving as a player. Is he going to be in an environment that's going to cultivate learning and playing basketball the right way? Well, people say, well, what is that? I mean, he was trained by San Antonio. Look at the way he's come up. So there is a certain style he would probably prefer to play. And I'm sure that Fizdale, he has that type of style mentality. Doc Rivers has that style and mentality. Those guys, I'm assured of. The other ones, I'm guessing more. But I think it's about an organization just going to support him and his family and the things that he deems to be important. But he wants to be the best basketball player in the world. And where can he go and develop and be that?
So 2 points on this. For Kawhi, I would imagine, and I do not know Kawhi Leonard at all personally, what he wants is a stable franchise and the ability to compete for championships year after year after year. The people around Kawhi, anyone who has reached that level typically has people in place that worry about the things that they can't spend their time worrying about. Meaning, you're Kawhi Leonard, he has to focus on basketball. But he is, at this point now, an international star. There is money to be made, generational money to be made, based on being Kawhi Leonard. That is what you have representation for. That is what you have a group for. And I would think it is incumbent upon whomever he meets with, these teams, to have the basketball part of the pitch, and then, even if it's in a separate room or with his agent or after the basketball part, and say, by the way, by being in New York, by being in Los Angeles, here are the dollars you can generate. Here is the essentially free money that is out there waiting for you. That is what I don't think it's a coincidence that the 4 teams outside of Toronto that
are in the 2 biggest
markets. Sure. And Kawhi Leonard has earned that, even if it's not what he's focused on. When you have a team around you, it's their job to be focused on that.
And don't think it was a coincidence for what he did. Because let's not, we made light of this. But Kawhi is the guy that dumped Brand Jordan for a New Balance. Yeah. Yesterday at the parade, He did have it on a shirt. What? Right. What'd that shirt say?
Boardman gets paid.
Boardman gets paid. Now, you know you can only pay him so much as a basketball player. So for me, one of the pitches, and Nick got to it, is who can present to him opportunities that Kawhi can make? Because he was upset that he wasn't one of the marquee guys at Jordan Brand. Who can make him that star from a marketing standpoint?
And look at the top guys in the league. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but LeBron's got $1 billion lifetime deal. Harden got, I think it was $300 million from Adidas. Durant has $100 million deals waiting for him or already in place, right? Steph has this richest ever deal from Under Armour. Anthony Davis, one of the reasons he wanted to leave New Orleans to get to L.A. was because he was not making the money a player of his skill set should. We'll see on Giannis. He's in a small market. He just ascended. And then there's Kawhi. There's your top seven guys in the league. All of them are equaling or outdoing their on-court earnings with off-court earnings. It's Kawhi's turn now. And he can do that in Toronto. He's better served to do that in New York or L.A. That has to be a part of the pitch for all four of those teams that meet with him, to have their business person in the room and say, here's the money you can make by living here, by working here.
All right, moving on to Aaron Rodgers now. New coach, same issues apparently. Matt LaFleur replaced Mike McCarthy amidst rumors of tension between McCarthy and Rodgers. But is there now tension between LaFleur and Rodgers as well? Rodgers seems frustrated that LaFleur's offense doesn't give him freedom at the line of scrimmage, saying, quote, I don't think you want me to turn off 11 years. There's stuff that not many people in the league can do at the line. That's not a humble brag. That's just a fact. Matt LaFleur chimed in by saying, I mean, this is Aaron Rodgers. He's had a lot of freedom to make those calls, and deservedly so. Now, how do we reconcile that and get to a place where we put him in the best position to succeed? See, break all this down. What do you make of it all?
This is going to be a challenge because Matt LaFleur, this is his first opportunity to be a head coach. And I tell people this all the time as far as coaches. Well, what do coaches teach? When you don't have volume after volume after volume, encyclopedia after encyclopedia of football, you know what you teach? You teach what someone taught you. Greatest influence in his life has been Kyle Shanahan. This is all he knows. He hadn't coached at a bunch of high-level places. He hadn't had a bunch of mentors, guys that are icons in football. He's going to teach what he knows. He's going to try to run everything that Kyle Shanahan ran. He's going to try to call plays the best way, the way Kyle Shanahan called plays. So this is going to be an experiment. And Kyle Shanahan has never coached someone like Aaron Rodgers. So even when he goes back to his mentor and asks him, okay, we're in this situation, man, what would we do? He's never had a guy like this. And I've seen in this league, man, there are certain guys, 99% of us, out of the over 20,000 ever played this game, we are system players. We need a harness, a bridle, a saddle. We need to be put in a situation so that we can flourish. But every once in a while, the one percenters, and that is Reggie White, Lawrence Taylor, Aaron Rodgers, these type of guys, you have to make a system that they can flourish in. And Aaron Rodgers has seen every defense known to man. And in 11 years, what Aaron Rodgers just told the coach is, you want me to go to the line of scrimmage and they're in a defense that I could gut right now. You want me to run a play that you gave me and that play is not the best play for this defense. So you want me to make the adjustments after we go three and out, after we're off to the sideline and you get to the side and you see the Polaroids or you look at the computer, you make adjustments after the series. No, the great players can make an adjustment in the series. We were playing New Orleans in the playoff one time. And I'm going to tell you, Randy Moss, he taught me a lot about football because there were things that we could do with him that we would never be able to do with myself. We were in a highly contested playoff game. We knew when they put Randy and myself to the same side, they were going to try to blitz or try to bracket me. And we put in a hot call that Randy was going to stand at the line of scrimmage and Dante Pepper, if he saw this look, was just going to throw it to him. They were the only two on the team to know. I was in the way. I didn't even know what they were going to do.
And look at what he does.
And Randy Moss and Dante make the adjustment. They side adjust and we get a touchdown in a playoff game and they get their roll on. If we didn't make some changes, I saw when we played Lawrence Taylor, Buddy Ryan came in and told the team, we're going to double team him every play. I was like, coach, we can't do that. We got a quarterback, so that's only 10 guys on the offense. We're putting two guys to him. Now we only play an 8-man football. He said, but if you don't block that guy, you got no chance at winning. So there are certain players in this 100-year we've been playing, that you have to let them create the system. And that's what Aaron Rodgers should be allowed to do there in Green Bay.
And that play is a great example. Because before you had Randy, it was you and Jake Reed. And you guys were prolific. You guys set the NFL record, I think, for consecutive 1,000-yard seasons by two wide receivers on the same team.
Yes.
The first duo to ever do it in back-to-back years. And I know you love Jake and are in contact with Jake to this day, so I say there's no disrespect to him. If they run that hot to Jake, you get the first, it was third and one there. You get the first down.
Yes.
And that's about it.
That's it.
There might have only been one football player in the league that season that play right there results in a 65-yard touchdown, break the playoff game over. You guys are going back to the NFC Championship game.
There were some times with Randy, he ran some routes and broke off his route and threw his hand up. We watched the films like, why you got your hand up? He said, that's what I'm letting you know you're open. So we start changing some things that allow him to be able to be creative.
You have to adjust for elite talent. Now, everyone that makes the NFL is super talented. But if you are an elite talent amongst NFL players, and Aaron Rodgers, we all know about how elite his arm is. But what this is about is his brain. It's about when he gets to the line of scrimmage, having 13 years in this league, having seen every defense that every scheme teams try to throw at him to confuse him, what he knows that Matt LaFleur will not know yet. Because I watched this offense when I was in Houston. So it was Matt LaFleur was in Houston in 08, 09. I got there a little bit after. And what the quarterback in this offense has is two options. He goes to the line of scrimmage and call play A or B. And there is an enormous amount of pre-snap movement and motion that once you are actually in what you're going to run, the play clock is tick, 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 tick. You're down to 7-8 seconds. Even if you know what we're running is drawing dead, there's no time to change it. You just have to go with it. And that was a frustrating thing for people covering a Texans team that had Matt Schaub as the quarterback. If you have Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, it is putting unnecessary handcuffs on it. So, now that's not to say Matt LaFleur's system can't work, but it has to adjust to the talent, just like the Vikings offense would have worked if they didn't change anything for Randy. But it wouldn't have been as good as it could have been. You guys wouldn't have broke the record for points in the season if you don't adjust to your individual talent.
So let's get back to how we started this segment. How does this play out? Is this going to be a series of frustrating games and weeks for Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, there's going to be a sense of frustration if you don't allow Aaron Rodgers the freedom. All of our great quarterbacks in the league, that's an advantage that you have. Offensive football, there's a couple advantages that you have. One is the play call. You know where the ball's going to go. Number two is you know the snap count. So all these things you have to take advantage of. So the push-pull becomes with Matt LaFleur. First time calling plays as a head coach in Lambeau Field or wherever they go with Aaron Rodgers. How quick can I call the play and get it to Aaron to allow him the flexibility? Because if I get Aaron the play call and we get out of huddle by 20 seconds, then Aaron Rodgers won't have those problems. You can make the adjustments. Tell the tight end, no, I need you off the line of scrimmage. I need you to come over here, partner with the right tackle. We're going to get a double team. Move your running back. So it becomes important for him on his call sheet that he gets the plays to Aaron quicker so that Aaron can get to the line of scrimmage because it takes more time in this system to get to the audible system.
And this is the biggest adjustment for first-time head coaches, which is you know what you know. And one of the reasons Patriot offensive coordinators have very often not been successful as head coaches is because of this exact opposite problem. They are used to having a quarterback who can do all of this, so they give their quarterback empowerment at the line of scrimmage to do all these different things Brady could do, and then when their quarterback's brain isn't Tom Brady's, they don't succeed. Matt LaFleur has never had a quarterback with Aaron Rodgers' brain or ability, so if you put the same restrictions on him you had on Marcus Mariota, you're not putting him in the best position to
succeed. One of the legendary things about New England is Tom Brady conducting the offensive meetings, kind of predicting what situations we're going to be in, what they're going to be running, and the types of calls we're going to call. It pays out in these tight situations. You see Brady all the time move Gronk over. Hey, Gronk, no, you know what? You were tight end. I want you to move way outside. Edelman, you're in the slot. I want you to move out to the right. They isolate Gronk and get him in a one-on-one matchup. You're like, why'd that defense have that guy cover him? Because of the flexibility at the line of scrimmage. It makes a difference in winning and losing NFL games.
Really good stuff. Interesting.
Back here, first things first. Look who's here. FS1 NBA analyst Sarah Kustaw.
Thanks for having me back again.
We love having you here, Sarah.
Thank you.
A lot of basketball to discuss. Who better to discuss it with?
Oh, yeah.
Sarah, rumor has it Houston has a problem. It is being reported that there is turmoil in the Rockets organization, most notably friction between the two superstars, James Harden and Chris Paul. Rockets GM Daryl Morey tried to downplay the reports of animosity. Take a listen.
We have two high-level competitors, Chris and James, who their only goal in life at this point is to win the title. They've accomplished everything else. They're both going to be first ballot Hall of Famers. Basically, two competitive superstars at that level, there's going to be times when they're extremely competitive, extremely focused on, you know, how do we get to that next level? And when we don't, there's going to be frustration. And I'm frustrated. Our top players are frustrated. Mike D'Antoni's frustrated. We want to take the last step and be the champion. And I think it's good that there's tension in the sense that we all want to win.
Clearly, Daryl Morey downplaying anything going on between these two. What was your reaction when you heard all this?
I feel like we've kind of been talking about this and have had dialogue about the tension between these two since the end of the postseason. And a lot of that was understandable given the fact of how they finished the year. And it's very true. They are winners. They want to compete for a championship. They probably thought what they had was an opportunity to get there given the Kevin Durant injury and the way things finished out. However, what I was most curious about in reading the Tim McMahon article that he discussed some of this was the difference in the playing style. And there's been so much talk about how the Houston Rockets play because of James Harden, because of his efficiency in isolation. A part of why they choose to play that way is because he's been doing historic things that we have not seen because of the talents that he has. And Mike D'Antoni also factors into this, given the fact that there has been discussion and issues with his contract, if there will be an extension. So I think with all of that in its totality is why the Houston Rockets have a lot of decisions to make. And the landscape of the NBA has changed with the injuries of Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson. You look at this Houston Rockets team and you say they should continue doing what they're doing. Do you just run it back because they have been this close and now they don't have the team that they have come head-to-head with and fallen? However, I think a lot of decisions need to be made going into the season because I would have a hard time looking at Mike D'Antoni in the last year of his contract, not getting an extension, discussions between the playing style with two of your leaders that you assume that everything is just going to be smoothed over if you don't hash that out before the season starts.
All right, so I can tell you what Daryl Morey believes, and this is not speculation, then I can tell you what I believe. What Daryl Morey believes is they should be the favorites. Now, everything we're saying about the Lakers, we should say about Houston.
Favorites in the West?
Favorites to win the title. That they should be the favorites to win the title given what's happened with Golden State. Daryl Morey believes the Rockets are in a position very few teams in the NBA are, which is they are going to return their exact same starting five. That they are not trading Chris Paul, they're not trading Clint Capella. Now, do I believe that they would have liked to try to trade Chris Paul? I do believe that. I think Chris Paul is a big part of the problem here, more on that in a moment. Do I believe they would have liked to potentially trade Clint Capella if the Warriors were returning everyone? Absolutely. Because if your goal, if you're obsessed with getting through the Warriors, Clint Capella has shown at this point he's not super useful against those Golden State Warriors. Similarly, Kevin Love was a really good player against a bunch of teams, not very useful against the Golden State Warriors, which is why even after the Cavs won the title in 16, they were shopping Kevin Love potentially because they knew they were going to have to go through Golden State. So Daryl thinks a lot of this is overblown and thinks that there's regular tension between Chris Paul and James Harden that there would be on any team. Here's what I believe. I believe Chris Paul is a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the six greatest point guards ever, an outstanding player. And he doesn't get along with people. And he is abrasive. And it is his way or no way. And he is, for the first time in his career, since after his rookie season, by year two, Chris Paul was an MVP candidate. By year three, he almost won it. He's been the best player on every team he's ever been on until right now. And now not only is he not the best player, but he is a diminished player. And we have heard so many coaches say, what is the hardest thing in sports? Coaching the all-time great who's no longer great. And I think Chris Paul is struggling with that. And I think it is a guy who has always been abrasive to a degree, who doesn't know how to say the same. You can make the same point a bunch of different ways. He makes it the point his finger in his face that way, and now he's doing that not as the best guy on the team, not as the guy that everything runs through, and that is going to cause some friction. Now, the Rockets are stuck here, though. No one is trading for Chris Paul and giving you anything close to equal value. The only way you would get off that contract is including extra picks, and you're not getting a player to replace him. So that's the position they're in. Now, do I think the Rockets, despite all that, could come back and do what they did last season? Sure, they had the best record after the All-Star break, and then you'll see in the playoffs. But the team they couldn't get through, Golden State, is going to be lessened, which is one of the reasons why I think they might be putting a pause on potential major offseason moves. But this isn't all fake. Like, the Chris Paul, James Harden tension is real. Is it enormous turmoil? I don't know. But it's not made up. That I'm very confident in.
Yeah, a couple of things happened in Houston. Number one is they don't have any confidence in the coach. That's why they didn't give the coach an extension. Even the extension they talked about, part of the extension was they could still fire him and the money at the end of the contract wasn't going to be guaranteed. They're going to give him like $2 million even if he signed the extension. Well, why are you giving me an extension to fire me? So that they got a huge problem with the coach. I think they have a problem with style. Houston is one of the few teams in the NBA. During the regular season, they don't do a bunch of practicing. The owners told us that. Daryl Morey has told us that. And when you get to a playoff series, the practice and the connective tissue that they don't have, because they don't spend a lot of time on the court during the season, the postseason is totally different. Where you spend a lot of time on the court and you don't see D'Antonio from a style standpoint change defensively. So they got a number of issues besides Chris Paul, because this is the same Chris Paul. He was that way in college. He was that way at every stop he's been in the NBA. And Harden's biggest problem is he looked at his critics. He looked at what people were saying. He wasn't going to be in shape. He's perfected that. Isolation ball, pick and pop, he's mastered that. So him being great has affected Chris Paul,
right?
Because Chris Paul is used to driving the car. And you know what Houston's told him? Hey, get in the passenger seat. And he's like, man, I saw that car crash coming against Golden State. We could have avoided. I was healthy. If we would have run a different offense with me running the point, we could have potentially gotten through that. So these are all real conflicts. But right now, they got to forget all that. The way the West is shaking out, they need to come back as the same team. Capella just got better. Why? Because Golden State's not going to have the Hampton Five to be able to go against. So I think they're one of the favorites in the West as we stand today because of the point you made. They're going to have their whole starting lineup coming
back. Yeah, and you look at it, I mean, the issue comes down to, and when we say with style, if on-off numbers of your two best players are better when they're each on the floor by themselves as opposed to being on the floor together, you have a problem. And that's something you need to figure out, because you're going to start a game and you're going to finish a game with those two players on the floor. So that needs to be when your team is at its best.
And Chris Paul, John Wall, they have the two worst contracts in the NBA. Chris Paul is not tradable. You couldn't trade him for a six-pack and a ham sandwich right now. They got $120 million. Yeah, Jason, like that. They got $120 million coming to him over the next 3 years.
Yeah.
We're wondering, man, can he make it through the playoffs? Last year he did do that, but he's not the player that he once was.
There's one point you made that I disagree with, and that is the faith in the coach. Daryl Morey and Tillman Fertitta went to Mike D'Antoni's house, thought they had shook hands on a deal. Mike D'Antoni says, listen, I'm non-confrontational to a fault. I should have more directly told them, just talk to my agent, Warren Legarry. When they brought that same deal to Warren Legarry, Legarry scuttled it. This was the second time around. This wasn't the $2 million buyout. This was a better contract. I believe
This is after the coach got upset,
mm-hmm.
walked out of the meeting.
Yep.
You know what Tillman Fertitta did? He got on his private plane. So let's put that in there.
Yes.
He got on his private plane, went to West Virginia.
And went to go see him to try to fix it. Yeah.
You know how I know what people believe in you? What they pay you. What's your contract say?
But see, I think before the season starts, Mike D'Antoni will have a new contract. I don't believe
it. But why do you have to fight over it?
Well, okay, well, that's a separate issue. But
because it undermines his authority with the player.
Totally.
Chris Paul's I'm stuck with for 3 years, so now as a coach, I come to a coach, this is my last year, I can't tell Chris Paul, the truth.
This is the way it's got to be.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Which is one of the reasons why they
have
to
get a deal. And on top of the back, $5 million a year for a coach of Mike D'Antoni's resume and caliber, I mean,
The offer that he didn't like was $5 million a year, and you get $1 million for every playoff round you advance. So it's $6 million you get past the first round, $7 million you get past the second round. Listen, I'm not negotiating the contract. I'm simply telling you, I think they will get a contract done with Mike D'Antoni. And for Chris Paul can say, hey, I was great in game six. And it was. It was one of the two games in the playoffs he was great in against the Warriors. But game five, the swing moment in that fourth quarter when they could have taken control of that series with Durant gone, Chris Paul was bad, Harden wasn't great, and that's when the Rockets, what could have been them and the Raptors in the NBA Finals, that's when it all fell apart. Once again, the Warriors would stumble.
After another dominating win, Alex Morgan and the United States take on Sweden in a highly anticipated showdown. Coverage begins at 2 Eastern on Fox, and all matches are live on Fox FS1 and streaming on the Fox Sports app. All right, we're back here with Sarah Kustak. It is time for us to go viral. Yesterday, Kawhi Leonard was in rare form, fully embracing the Raptors championship celebration with his teammates, his fans, even got the much coveted key to the city. Kawhi's become so popular in Toronto that even a fake Kawhi was getting some love. Look at him signing some autographs, taking selfies, and acting like it's no big thing.
How tall do these people think Kawhi Leonard is, man?
No, people don't realize that.
And look at how thin
Shaq
he is.
Shaq is actually not even that tall.
Okay, good joke, Jenna. I just don't understand how these people get fooled by this. Or like the Klay Thompson, remember him?
Yes.
That was 40 pounds overweight.
That was sitting in the stands?
Sitting in the stands. I don't get it.
Like, do they think Kawhi's really wearing his jersey?
I don't understand any of it. See, you
got
to take.
What do you got? What do you got?
Come on.
Is there a Nick Wright lookalike around? Because I like, every once in a while, I get tired of Nick Wright. And I like to have him just come in and fill in every once in a while.
So. You did the Nick Wright lookalike.
No, I'm just talking about this. I mean, I believe there's other people out there on the street, not famous people and everything, not cartoon characters.
Not Humpty, not Tom Green, yes. Just someone. Yeah. Okay.
Didn't he compare you to a cartoon character?
I'm not telling you who it is because you can't remember. And it's
I can't great. Remember. Okay, but I'll get back to it.
I've never seen that.
Squidward.
We need to dig it up.
Squidward.
Excuse me?
That's what it is. Right from SpongeBob?
This dude right here is cheering for Kawhi as much as the country's cheering for Kawhi to stay because if Kawhi leave, what are you going to do? It's right back to being nobody.
You think he's charging for those selfies?
No. Absolutely not.
This is fun, guys.
Back to AD.
Oh, it's real funny, Dusty.
Acquired him over the weekend.
You have a non-speaking role.
Optimism is high around Tinseltown. That
if you had a unibrow, though, people wouldn't know as much.
You want to know how high optimism is in L.A., Sarah? The Lakers, tied for the most losses in the NBA the last 6 years, are currently the favorites to win the 2020 NBA title at 3-1 odds. That is why the AD trade was so important for L.A. Sarah Kustak, will the Lakers live up to expectations?
If those are the expectations, I'm not certain that they will win a title next season. I think the league is as wide open as we've ever seen it. I think with the movement in free agency and the way the rosters fill out, that so much can change. However, do I think that LeBron and AD will win a title in the next 2 years, in the next 3 years? Yeah, absolutely. I think the Lakers have just as much of a shot given this move and also the other moves that they could potentially make. But LeBron, I believe, is going to have a season unlike one that we've seen in a long time, given the fact that he's gotten rest, given the fact that he is as motivated as ever. Anthony Davis didn't play as much as we would have seen last season, given the circumstances of a situation in New Orleans. So I think it's too early to say that the Lakers will win a title, but do I believe that they are one of the top three, four teams I would put out there? Without a doubt.
I think people, and I like to go back on the history and look at this year's playoffs. What if the All-Star break, Anthony Davis is traded to the Lakers? And Anthony Davis and LeBron go into the playoffs. You saw in the first round of the playoffs, the Clippers gave the Warriors fits. Now, I'm not going to say as an eighth seed, would LeBron and AD been able to pull off that? But
what about as the seventh seed?
But what if they had made it to the second round? What if they had avoided them in that first round? And then we saw injuries start to take place. So, to me, seeing what Kawhi did with the supporting cast that he had, and knowing that Kevin Durant wasn't going to be there, man, LeBron and AD, yes, the league is getting ready to be reset And right now, they should be. Look at the top two tandems in basketball. We typically give it to whoever's the best basketball player has a chance to be able to win. Now, we don't know where KD finalized. We don't know where Kawhi is, more importantly than KD, because Kawhi has shown that him and the supporting cast can win a championship. But right now, AD and LeBron, when the league resets, they are the best two tandem that we have in the league.
And unless Kawhi teams up with someone extraordinary, the next best duo is a big drop-off. Is the next best duo Giannis and Chris Middleton? Is that what it is? Is it
Joel Embiid
and Ben Simmons on the list? Russ and Paul George, who, while both excellent individual players, we have seen them as a team thus far have a very clear ceiling, and that's been the first round. To your point, C, even with all the Lakers' injuries last year, if just LeBron misses half as many games and they find a way to get to the seventh spot.
Yes.
With Anthony Davis. If they make that trade, trade away these players so those guys, so you have the bare bones roster that they have right now. They'll obviously fill that in. If they take the spot the Spurs were in, which is the seventh seed, Spurs took Denver seven games. You don't think the Lakers could do that? And then, okay, listen, with respect to my friends in Denver, I'll take LeBron in the game seven over Nikola Jokic and those Denver Nuggets. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The next round, Portland went seven games against Denver. How's that one going to go? And then could the Lakers have been in a position, if this trade happens when Rich Paul and Anthony Davis tried to force it through, where they are the ones taking on the wounded Golden State Warriors in the conference finals? Of course. So next year, when the Warriors are unfortunately wounded again, because Klay won't be there at the beginning of the year, KD, I believe, will be somewhere else, but even if he's there, probably won't be playing all year. Of course the Lakers should be exactly where they are. And if you're not a gambler, being the favorite does not mean you're the favorite versus the field. Right now, Vegas doesn't say the Lakers are more likely to win a championship than the rest of the league combined. They're just saying, if you have to make one pick, if you can pick one team, the Lakers are your best pick. Of course, that should be the best pick right now. And LeBron, even after the injury, gave you 27, 8, and 10. And now, LeBron, your point yesterday, Sarah, I thought was a great one. LeBron's played 8 straight years into June. Since his third season, so 13 straight years, he averaged over 90 games played. The last time he had a season end before June was 2010. Last year, it ended March 29th, and he played 55 games. The level of recuperation his body's going to have been able to go through that is unlike anything in his entire basketball life since high school is going to, I also agree, give you an even better LeBron James, even when we account for he's a year older.
Now, I give LeBron a lot of credit, but there's a couple things I do want to watch. I don't do the math like you guys. Just because you had time off in your 17th season, them tires are still low. Like, you don't get no retread after 16 seasons, even though you're not playing. Last year, I saw LeBron, too, at a weight I wasn't comfortable with him playing at.
Posting.
Is that going to continue? And say you get off early. So now, do I allow my body to recuperate and get out of shape? How hard is it for LeBron to get back into shape with 17 years? So you guys said something. Okay, there's rest, but there is something on the other side, recovery, and then I have to work that much harder to be able to get back into shape. That's one of the things at the end of your career that you hate, and that's, man, it becomes harder and harder to get back into the best shape of my career. Now, I believe LeBron will, but I just don't want you guys
just
to miss.
Assign it to him.
No, we just can't assign it to him. I do believe that the overall wear and tear, It did play a role in the Warriors. We saw with Iggy. We saw with Draymond. We saw with Klay. We saw with Steph. And LeBron is the ultimate because he had been to even more than all of them.
Well, first of all, the last time LeBron was in a game was March 29th, which seems like eons ago. Does the head coach or the supporting cast concern anyone at this point?
I'm glad you brought that up. That was the next point I was going to make. It doesn't concern me, but I will say any time that you have a new coach trying to implement a new system with now assistant coaches and Jason Kidd, Lionel Hollins, that aren't his guys.
Yeah.
That's going to be a process that's going to be very intriguing to watch and figure, because they're going to be finding their footing. They're going to be learning to work together as a coaching staff, not to mention that you're coaching two of the superstars in the league. So I think all of that collectively, also figuring out who you're going to have on your roster, mm-hmm. is going to be a work in progress.
I mean, they only got five guys under contract, so they don't have any bad contracts right now.
Right.
All right?
Right.
So they can fill out the roster wherever they want to. One thing, I thought you made a great point earlier. LeBron has been better in year number two when he moves. Miami was year number two when they won. Back in Cleveland, year number two, they were better. So I do believe they'll win a championship, but let's just not put everything into year number one. LeBron has shown in that year number two, special things have happened.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.